Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for the weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast The KE Report. I do want to, as always, kind of at the start of these shows, recap what we were seeing throughout this week in terms of economic data. We also have to talk about Fed speak and what the markets have done. I'm kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at The Money Show. Now, Mike, look, we were beaten over the head throughout the last few weeks with this whole debt ceiling debate. It caused a little bit of volatility in the markets, but overall, markets just continued to grind sideways. We're recording this on Friday, and look, it looks like the debt ceiling is now behind us. So, Mike, in terms of big picture outlooks, what comes next? What do people worry about next for these markets?
Sure. You know, it's funny about this whole debt ceiling thing. I mean, you know, you go back to 2011 when we had the big crisis back then, and that's when Congress, the president at the time, really did try and push things too far. And then it was a whoops, the market's down, what was it, I think 17% in a week and a half, you know, from high to low. And that taught everybody, Republicans, Democrats, you know, anybody on any end of the political spectrum, what happens when you really do take this thing too far. So what's happened since then? Markets taught politicians a lesson. Politicians still like to pretend that there's not going to be something and they're not going to cave in the end. But what happens every time? They cave in the end because, you know, they own stocks too, and so do their constituents, and they don't want to get an earful saying, hey, you just crashed the Dow Jones 10,000 points. What's wrong with you? So I think that it's not surprising that as we're talking, the sort of elements of yet another debt ceiling cave are coming together. Probably going to be some spending changes, probably going to be some, you know, side deals in it and so on and so forth. But, you know, surprise, surprise, here we are, and it's going to be some kind of deal. Yeah, I don't think that should be surprising at all. I mean, really, that's the lesson that Wall Street and you know, has taught Main Street and has taught Washington over the years. So that doesn't surprise me. I think you talk about what's the shift next. Well, you know, the economy is still going to be on people's minds. There's still concerns, you know, has the yield curve been telling us a recession is coming? Has the Fed gone too far? And some, you know, other questions related to that. So I think what's naturally going to happen is people are going to shift to the Fed and the economy. My take is that the Fed probably is done. I suppose they could maybe squeeze out one more June hike. I don't think they should, but then again, nobody at the Eccles building in DC calls me before they make their interest rate decisions. But that, you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't think they should. I think there's a chance they will. But I think the Fed is pretty much at the end of its cycle now, given that inflation, while not being where they want it to be, has been coming down, or at least the rate of change in inflation has been coming down. So I think they're achieving some of the goals they wanted to. And, you know, you do have some concerns about the banking sector and just tighter credit and so on, plus interest sensitive sectors of the economy cooling down and this, you know, and all of that. So I think we're probably pretty close to the end of that cycle. And I think when it comes to the economy, you know, there's been a lot of talk, especially amongst the people that speak at our conferences, our live conferences, our virtual events, and so on. A lot of the experts have talked about the theory of a rolling recession, where you have this situation where certain sectors of the economy are weak, certain are strong at different points in the cycle, partially as a result of what the Fed's been doing, partially as a result of the recovery, you know, and that now and then the stimulus running out from post-COVID and so on. So you get, you know, you get times when certain sectors are doing better than others, but you don't have this whole meltdown economy wide. And I actually tend to think that that looks pretty much like what we've seen, right? I mean, we've seen various sectors like housing and in autos slow at different points in the cycle, but at other times, you know, there's been things like tech to jump in and pick up the torch, so to speak. So I think that it's going to be an economic environment that's not fantastic, but also not terrible. On the interest rate side, it's going to be a Fed that's going to be moving to the sidelines if they have not done so already. And in this environment, you and I, we've talked for a long time. I've really enjoyed doing segments with you guys. And As you know, I kind of shifted from that, be boring stance last year and really for a full 18 months where it was, hey, be defensive, be boring. The more boring your portfolio is, the better off you'll be, to more of a be bold approach. Focus on more offensive sectors than defensive. Get more aggressive with some of your bargain hunting versus hoarding cash. And look what's happened this year. I mean, the market overall, especially sectors like tech, which I would put definitely in the bold category, have done very, very well.
Mike, I give you the utmost credit because, yeah, as we chatted for over a year, you were saying be defensive, play some of the safer sectors. And then this year, you, along with a couple of other of our guests, switched and you played the market to the upside then as the market has rebounded. But to that point, look, the breadth has been very concentrated on a few stocks, and that kind of leads to what the Fed's going to do. It doesn't seem like we're going to get this inflow of free or cheap money anymore that drove markets for a decade plus. Does that mean that the upside for markets is still somewhat limited if we're not going to have that uber dovish Fed that we had for a while there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you look at some sectors outside of tech, you look at small caps and so on. I mean, it definitely hasn't been a great year. You're flatlined down a little bit in a couple of these sectors. You're up a couple percentage points in others, but it's certainly not having the blowout performance like you're seeing in big tech. And I think that that speaks to the fact that this is not a great economic environment. I mean, this is not, a total throw caution to the wind. Everything's wonderful. Fed's cutting, money's coming in. Throw a party like you had, especially when all the stimulus was being thrown at the economy and the markets post-COVID. But again, that doesn't mean that you can't still invest in bold sectors and outperform and do well. So I don't want to suggest that everything's coming up roses, but when the Fed shifts, even if it doesn't shift to cutting, if the Fed just moves to the sidelines, that takes a big sort of headwind out of the way of the markets, right? The Fed going from tightening tighter money to just, hey, you guys have fun, we're going to go, take a siesta here. That is all else being equal, an improvement in terms of the macro backdrop. If the economy does not totally fall into the toilet, and you just have some sectors that are weak while others are strong or decent from time to time, that is a great opportunity for stock picking and for sector selection, as opposed to a full-on bearish market environment, which is what we had last year, where pretty much nothing was working, so except outside of energy. So I think that that's again, is the environment fantastic? No, but it's better, and I think that it has been better for 6, 7, 8 months now. The market's been telling you that. If you look at the performance by sector, it has a much more offensive sort of, offensive tone to it than defensive, like we had for a long time. And it's worth noting that even in this market environment, other things that are traditional good hedges and good investments, when the Fed moves to the sideline and the US dollar stops going up every day, things like gold are doing well too. I mean, GLD, the gold's up 7, 8%, give or take, year to date, which is not a bad performance, especially in light of the fact that it held steady last year while the markets fell 18, 19, 20%. So again, it doesn't mean, as part of the, I should probably amend my thesis from be bold to be bold and still own gold. It's a little fun there with the rhyming, but it's true. I mean, that still has an important part in that person's portfolio, despite the fact that, we don't have an overall bearish environment for stocks.
Well, Mike, in addition to being bold and maybe owning gold, nice pun there, it does seem like there's also a sea change as far as investors also seeking out yield and pulling some money out of the markets and rotating it over into instruments that provide 4 or 5% returns, which we haven't seen for a dozen years. Do you think that in any way that changes the tone of how investors previously were forced to be in the markets because there was no way to get any return in savings? And now they do have an option. Now there is an alternative. Do you think that that maybe pulls some money out of the markets, and could that keep us in a sideways slog for a while?
Yeah, I think, absolutely the whole TINA, there is no alternative acronym that was so popular for a while, that doesn't hold in an environment where you have, cash pay or cash or money markets and so on paying 4, 5, 6% depending on where you're invested. So no, I agree with you. That's definitely going to provide competition. Cash, and there will be some people that will just be happy to say, hey, look, I can get 5% and I don't have to have this volatility. That's good enough for me. So I think you are going to see, you've already seen, for example, in the US, a lot of money rotate from lower yielding deposits where banks have been stingy about yield and into going into money market instruments where people can earn 100 or 200 basis points more. That's actually been part of this whole depositor flight where we've seen where the banks haven't adapted, but people can get higher yields in money markets. So they're pulling their money from one place and putting it somewhere else. That's going to have some fallout. That's going to have some impacts. We already saw it again in some of these banks that failed. But again, do I think, if I'm wrong on inflation and the Fed really needs to keep hiking aggressively from here, that's when you're going to have big problems. But at this point, I just, I'm not all that concerned about it. I think it's going to pull some funds out. It's going to make it a little bit harder out there because you're not competing against zero, but you're competing against five. But still, I mean, I think people are going to see some of these opportunities in some of these sectors and the returns they're generating and probably say, hey, I can do better than five if I, play my cards right.
So to me, this sounds like a much more balanced and good market where you can get yield, you can balance some of your portfolio with dividend yielding assets, but then you can also look for some of the stocks that outperform. What does that mean for investors then? Do you need to be more active, more aggressive, or do you need to allocate some money to the broad averages and put some of your money into high yielding instruments?
Sure. I think it is a healthier environment. I mean, you go back a couple of years, one of the things that had me so worried was in this 0% yield environment, so much money was being thrown at so many dumb companies, profitless tech firms, IPOs, SPACs, all that garbage. You had so much money chasing just extreme high risk type assets because there was no alternative. It was too easy of a money environment. It was too silly, too aggressive, and so on. What you have now, and we flushed all of that junk out of the system, right? I mean, that was one of the reasons I was so defensive, is that SPACs were crashing and burning, no profit tech companies were failing, the IPO market dried up, and on and on. It was very much like the .com bust period. And even big tech obviously suffered as small tech had all those problems. But once you clean all that garbage out of the system and you lay the groundwork for a healthier market, the kind of environment we're seeing now is what happens. That's, again, you squeezed a lot of those excesses out. You have a situation where, people can, if they want to, just prudently sit in cash and earn a decent return instead of just throwing money at every stupid idea that comes down the pike from Wall Street. I think it is a more reasonable, more healthy, typical normal kind of market environment where, yes, if you're out there, you do the work, you can find promising investments. It's not just something where you blindly throw money into the market because you can't earn anything anywhere else. And frankly, we should be happy with that kind of backdrop. I think it is a productive, more constructive environment now, certainly, than we had 2 years ago.
Well, Mike, when you look at the market breadth, there is some concerns from some investors that there really are a lot of sectors not participating in. There are a dozen stocks crowded at the top of the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 that are really carrying the indexes. So big tech has become its own safe haven in a way, and people have piled into that. And if you look at what's happened in NVIDIA with AI, and if you look at what's happened with Microsoft and Amazon and Apple, these stocks are carrying the day. But if you look at the rest of the stocks and indexes, it's painting a different story. Do you see it being this bifurcated market maybe being a sign of sickness under the surface, or do you think that eventually other sectors will get the love when people filter out of these big mega tech stocks?
I think what your second option is most likely what's going to happen. I mean, has tech come too far too fast? Absolutely. I mean, let's be honest, you can't continue to have this kind of performance with nothing else participating. So if anything, we're going to see a breather. We're going to see that sector, take some time off and you pass the torch elsewhere. I mean, last year it was energy that was the only thing going up while everything else was going down. Now energy is consolidating and, not doing very well this year, but that's what happened. You have big runs, you have, strong performance in one sector, and then you take quite some time to digest it. So I think we'll see that in tech, and I think we will see the market broaden out, especially if we get to the point where the Fed truly everybody knows they're on the sidelines, and people can look at the economic data and say, okay, it's not great, but it's not terrible either. So I think the one thing holding people back is that there are those economic and Fed concerns. If we can resolve those, you're going to see tech take a breather. You're going to see money broaden out. And I think you're going to have a stronger back half of the year performance in a lot of these things that have lagged. So put me in the camp for it's going to broaden out while tech takes a breather. Whereas a couple of years ago, given the absolute ridiculousness in tech, I was much more worried about the opposite happening. Tech gives up the ghost and other sectors don't take up the lead, which is what happened in 2022.
What do you think drives markets in terms of the balance between economic data, and that carries over obviously to Fed policy, but if the Fed's going to be paused for a period of time, we balance out economic data with earnings or company specific news that could actually drive stocks. Maybe people switch back their focus less from what the Fed's going to do, more to what stocks are doing. What do you think should be the focus for investors then?
I think the overall earnings picture is not all that bad. I mean, you know, obviously the big stories when you get an NVIDIA come out and have this hugely powerful report and it drives the, you know, what their market cap up $200 billion in a day or whatever the number was. I mean, that's going to grab headlines. It's going to get people talking about froth and this, that, and the other. But that's the real outlier. If you look at the broader earnings picture for the S&P 500 as a whole, you know, you have a lot of other companies that are at least meeting or slightly beating numbers as opposed to everybody missing or only a handful of companies having these blowout results like NVIDIA. So I think that the overall earnings picture, again, is it's not that bad. And you know, that is saying something given all the things that have been thrown at this market. You know, even some sectors, gosh, was there even things like Toll Brothers, the home builder, the luxury home builder, had blowout numbers. And that's in an environment where mortgage rates are closing in on 7% again. So I think, you know, it's proof that there is still some resilience, there's still some, you know, decent backdrop and kind of environment. And again, that's kind of situation that I think is just not, doesn't make for a terrible, terrible market environment. It doesn't make for one of these environments where you really have to hunker down and hide, which is what you had to do in the back half of 2021 and pretty much throughout 2022.
So Mike, you brought up NVIDIA. I do have to ask you then, what do you think about this whole narrative around this potential AI bubble? It's definitely driven tech stocks. Clearly there's money for it. Are we in an AI bubble?
You know, I think it's hard to say because it's one of these things where you've got promise, you've got a real story and a thing that is going to, you know, I don't want to say change the world, but is going to have big impacts in a lot of different industries. But absolutely, sentiment gets carried away sometimes. Absolutely, you've got moves that, you know, you can't really fundamentally justify given the news being good, but is it really that good? So sure, there's going to be companies that are going to, you know, how many times have we seen this cycle, you know, whether it was blockchain not too long ago or the internet in general 20 plus years ago, and so on.
It's a story, right? Everyone likes a new story. It's exciting.
It's a story. You're going to have companies that are going to throw AI in a press release just to see if they can juice their stock 5% on the day. I mean, it's going to go through a cycle, and then some of these companies are going to crash and burn, and the ones that are really using AI for real businesses and, you know, real growth are going to come out of it stronger. So it's a cycle that you just have, you know, you can play it if you're a super aggressive trader. There are some longer term names that I think have promise. It's just, you got to make sure you don't get yourself carried away.
Well, Mike, just shifting over to the commodities space, when we've seen all these forecasts for the second half of this year of a contraction in the economy, possible recession, and then the other camp saying, hey, maybe it'll be a soft landing and maybe the economy will do better. How are you looking at the commodity space right now, just in a general sense?
Sure. I still think a lot of times, you know, especially the industrial base type metals, I mean, a lot of that's driven by what expectations are in foreign markets like China. I mean, the environment over there is not great. And I think that's, you know, there are concerns legitimately about Chinese demand and so on. So that's one of those things that, you know, you see in markets like copper and you see in some of those other base metals. So I think that unless and until we get, you know, more stimulus or sort of a return to some of the stronger growth in places like China, some of those base metals are going to struggle. But again, I think that you can balance that out with some domestic demand. You have parts, energy metals and so on that I think, you know, have a great longer term story. So there are some ways to still profit, even if some of your, you know, your steady go-to things that people know about and talk about for years and years, like copper, are struggling. So it goes from kind of commodity to commodity. you know, even in energy, for example, I think that you've got the Saudis that are out there kind of talking about maybe cutting back on production or trying to surprise the markets to support that. You know, I think that it's a decent outlook for energy moving forward. It's not going to be terrible. It's not going to be great. I think it's going to probably be decent. So, you know, those, like I said, I think it's really commodity by commodity, as opposed to just a broad everything's heading into the toilet or everything's going to be great kind of environment.
Well, Mike, when you look at the market, there were sectors that shined, like right now AI is shining, or when you look at, you know, some of the energy sector being a big boon in 2022, maybe not so hot this year. Are there any sectors that you see as being a dark horse that comes from behind and surprise investors this year, where you're seeing some relative strength, but maybe people haven't picked up on it yet?
You know, I think that the foreign stocks in particular, emerging markets, some names there, I think that that's one of those things where domestic, meaning U.S. companies and U.S. stocks, have so wildly outperformed for such a long time that a lot of U.S.-based investors aren't really thinking about ways they can profit in foreign markets. But we've already seen, you know, and this is something that I'm seeing talk about and some of our expert speakers, so it really alerts me to it, and that's why I'm thinking about it. So, you know, markets like Japan that have been left for dead forever are now coming back, and you've got some other foreign markets where valuations are so compelling that if the Fed moves to the sideline, we don't have this, you know, relentless rally in the U.S. dollar that we had all last year. Those are going to be some places to look. So I think that you're going to see gradually some more money, you know, get outside U.S. borders and try and profit in some of these foreign markets over the next couple of years.
What does that mean for the dollar? Does the dollar drop from here? Is the dollar stable above 100? Where do you see it going?
I think the dollar is going to be, you know, stable to weaker as we move forward. Again, I mean, what's the thing that drove the U.S. dollar relentlessly higher? It was an aggressive Fed that was not going to get out of the market's way. If the Fed just moves to the sidelines and there's less concern that they're going to be hiking every single day, then it's no longer going to be that relentless rally. So, you know, I think that the dollar, I mean, we've come up a bit in the last month or so on expectations that maybe the Fed will go in June. But even if the Fed goes in June, are they going to go in September and October and December and all next year? And on and on. No, they're not. Not in my opinion.
Well, and we haven't really talked about the bond market yet. What do you think about the direction of rates and the bond market once the Fed finally does pause and they take that siesta you mentioned? What do you think happens in the bond markets?
It's stability. I mean, you know, I don't think we're going to see yields plunge right back to where they were. We're not going to be in this environment as long as, you know, the economy is not going to be heading into a super recession or anything like that. I think you probably have a lot of chop. You probably in treasuries, I think, you know, in the credit risky areas, the market, high yield or corporate and so on. Again, I think you've got some places you can pick and choose where if you're not going to see a serious recession, you can get some value and get some better yields and, you know, stability is probably the word, the watchword I would use for bonds, and that, you know, stability is nice after the worst year for bonds and basically the bond market's history.
Don't bonds struggle though with a debt ceiling deal and with more bonds hitting the market because of the fact the government needs to fund itself?
Inflation is the real story, I think, when it comes to the bond market long term. And let's be honest, the numbers there are getting, you know, are they great? No. Are they getting better than they were last year? Yeah. And I think that's probably enough for stability there. I mean, again, you know, I think that the longer term, the debt issue this country faces is obviously troubling from a very long term perspective. At some point, we're going to have to get off this treadmill. But when does it really come home to roost? You know, I guess that's anyone's guess. I mean, we've been talking about this for years. I mean, shoot, you know, if you went back to 2011, like I mentioned, and say, oh, in 2011, you know, bonds should have gone to the toilet and stayed in the toilet. But did they really? No. I mean, it ended up being, you know, markets moved on to the next focus, which was the economy and inflation. And back then, you know, when can we get out of this sort of low yield world and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's a bigger, longer term issue. But, you know, in the longer term, we're all dead, right?
Well, Mike, you also mentioned that you see other markets like Japan or some other countries maybe taking the torch as well. Is this a year where investors finally look abroad and look at emerging market funds and look at emerging market indexes and start playing those because they've had a decade of underperformance compared to the U.S. markets? Is it time to look abroad?
Yeah, again, I think that investing abroad, look, you know, you asked what would be sort of a dark horse or a surprise kind of sector that could come back and, you know, and lead us out or be the next thing that people aren't looking at. And I think that foreign markets are going to be something that, again, after underperforming for so long, after just having a U.S. focused approach paying off, I mean, we're in this environment now where you can look for other alternatives and where the dollar moves from being a headwind to just sort of a neutral factor. That's when some, you know, you can start focusing on things like value.
All right, Mike, we'll wrap it up here. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your comments and in all fairness, how right you have been to switch with the tide of these markets, even in the face of just how negative still a lot of people are for the underlying broad averages for a number of reasons, and everyone has their reasons, right? But you have played the defensive side as markets were going down, and now you have the whole new term of be gold, but also or be bold, but also include gold, right? There's a balanced portfolio that seems to work in this market, and we haven't seen that environment in a long time. So, hey, Mike, really appreciate your thoughts. We'll chat with you again in a couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend and a very happy long weekend.
Great. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.